if we could reconvene for the governance meeting, that'd be great. All right, colleagues. Thank you all. I hope everybody received their documents yesterday. As a first idea here, I'd accept a motion to approve the agenda, unless someone has a concern with it. It's been moved. Is there a second? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Ayes have it. Secondly, if we could have approval of the minutes, unless someone has a concern about what's there. Someone move that?
So moved.
Is there a second? Moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. The ayes have it. All right, folks, let me tell you my game plan here. We have an hour. We're going to stick to it. We have other things to do. What you have before you is the result of a tremendous amount of work from our council's office, supported by the board, secretary's office, and this is a straw man bylaws, okay? They went through, they looked at a variety of different sources where it lays out things related to the board, and they've put it into the same organizational structure as we use for the RAC and the AAC. So, part of what I want us to focus on today is, do we have the right sections? Are there sections we think we don't need? What sections do we think we should spend considerable time talking about? But we're not going to talk about it today. We're going to go through and flag them. That'll set our agenda for the next time. After we do that, we will then turn our attention to the three areas that we worked on at our last meeting, the role of the board, the role of the chairman, and the definition of the governance committee. And we'll spend a little time there making sure we're comfortable with that, as well as because Carol's office did a great job of sort of identifying other areas where there are responsibilities, making sure we're either removing things or saying, yep, this needs to stay. All right, so that's the game plan. I did ask staff to provide for us all our interim procedures that we adopted in January, just because there's a lot of back and forth between these, and one of the decisions we need to make is what goes in bylaws versus what stays in procedures. And then I also, governing mission, it comes from the 2006 report that the board undertook itself. So again, another place where the board had spoken to itself about its roles and responsibilities, and another opportunity for us to go back and forth. So, people okay with that? Everybody understands what we're going to do?
One question.
Yes, Mr. Downey.
As we go through this process, I believe we should adopt the principle that nothing's approved till everything is approved.
I think that's right. Yeah. And I think, as we had talked about it last time, we're building these as we go. And when we think we're close, we're going to have some public input opportunity before the board finalizes them. So
we're not adopting a section.
No. But we're saying, hey, we think we're pretty okay with this. My experience of doing this before is once you get done, you need to do one more pass because there's a lot of redundancy and you just kind of need to clean up. So is everybody okay with that? All right. So the first question really has to do with, are you fairly comfortable with the sections as proposed? Would you like to just go through them kind of one by one and nod our heads? Is that what people would like to do? Want to do that? What?
Or shake them,
yes. that's exactly right. And I think, you know, in the end, we want to get to bylaws we all approve. So even though something hasn't been identified by some other group as of concern, if you have a concern about it, think we should talk about it, please say so, okay? So let's just go through them quickly in order. The first one is the mission, which is drawn from the WMATA website. Don't know if anybody thinks we need to at some point go back and revisit that or not.
And this is the one we adopted
last year, fairly.
Is it? Okay.
Fairly recent.
Okay,
safety was re-added.
Helpful to know. Everybody feels all right about that for the moment? Okay, we'll come back to board responsibilities. We'll also come back to the section on officers. Communication with the CEO and staff, secretary and general counsel. We asked staff to kind of write this up for us, or actually I think it's pulled from procedures. It was already there. Anybody feel the need? Yes, Ms. Porter.
My understanding was that the staff had wanted communications from the board to the general manager, the CEO, to be routed through the board secretary. Is that? Should that be what the procedure says, or should it say? I mean, I guess the question is, clearly all requests are directed to the CEO. Is it a procedural matter, or should it be in the bylaws how that is actually done?
Anybody have an opinion?
I think that would be procedural.
Ms. Porter? I'm sorry, I said the wrong name. Ms. Hutchins.
Okay.
Sorry.
I was just wondering. I'm awake too. You got a cat.
It's the other cat, right? I'm sorry.
And I'm the other cat. She's the first.
Okay.
Go.
I just wanted to say that I think it is procedure, that because I think we want to utilize, I think the clarity also has to be made the role of the board secretary as part of this, and that helps us determine that process. But there is a mechanism, this sets that mechanism for communicating with the general manager and ensuring that those are direct communications, not down the chain, and then facilitating the other is really right. To me, I think we should be.
So. It does say, the second sentence talks about copies of requests go to all board members and the board secretary. But I think that your point is right, that it's directed to these three folks who work directly for the board. Okay? That makes sense to everyone?
Sure.
Yes, Mr. Ewell. Can you put your mic on, Mr. Ewell? Sorry.
I do have a concern, but the CEO will provide a response within 2 weeks. I think we need to have a date to respond, but I think 2 weeks may be too long. Sometimes you need an answer back within, 5 days, 7 days. So I was going to offer and suggest maybe 10 days. Not that in the past, I mean, sometimes it took 2 months to get a response back for anything you ask. But more recently, staff has been very responsive, and we're actually getting responses back sometimes within 2 to 3 days. Mm-hmm. But I think if you make it too long, is 2 weeks is just too long. There's a lot of times what we're asking for is based on what citizens or riders are asking for. They've come through us, and then we forward them on. And I think when things are just dangling out there for, more than 10 days, they seem to get lost. And then other inquiries or requests are on top of them. But that's just a suggestion I'd like to offer, that instead of 2 weeks, maybe 10 days or no more than 10 days.
Mr. Pant, do you want to respond?
I was just going to say it just depends on the nature of the request. Like you say, if it's a simple request and something can be easily checked, we have sometimes gotten back the same day or within a day or two. I think the 2 weeks has been there for a while, and it says within 2 weeks. It may be an issue that requires some more research or getting some data or going to a jurisdiction. So say as soon as possible, or certainly
well,
within.
I think what can happen, and hasn't probably happened other than more recently, is that staff can be responsive in terms of acknowledging receipt of a request within 10 days. But if you need more time to actually provide, more detailed information, you can so note in your response back. But I think I think certainly within 10 days, somebody should be able to just simply say, we received, we acknowledge receipt, we're doing the research, and response will be forthcoming.
So in the sense of a response, that is a sufficient response.
Right.
We need to do more work. It's going to take longer.
Yes, that's satisfactory.
Mr. Downs.
Just as a clarification, if we're in a committee meeting or a board meeting and we make a request of the general manager, we don't have to follow up and do a written request, do we? or is that?
No, we keep track of those. No, you don't need to make.
Because it is full disclosure in a public session, et cetera. You can interpret this a bit to read that those have to be done in writing.
Ms. Porter.
I'm wondering, since these are bylaws and not procedures, I'm going to step on the other side of this right now, perhaps what we should say is something that the CEO will provide a timely response, and then we can delineate what that might be for various kinds of requests and procedures. Would that make – because I think what we're – because my sense is that we want to get the answer back as soon as possible, and for a lot of requests – you know, as it's been pointed out, we could get a response the next day. But for more complicated ones, then there has to be some discussion of the time frame. Perhaps putting something like that in the bylaw, saying we want a timely response unless it can be provided nearly immediately or some wording like that, the CEO will get back to the board with a sense of how long it will take.
No.
Maybe that's what we're after.
I think you make a good point, Ms. Porter, between what goes in bylaws versus what goes in procedures. And so my thought might be that we will do, as you say, provide a timely response and then take that really next little bit of this and say, you know, that belongs in procedures. I think in the bylaws it probably does need to say all responses are distributed to all board members. That was a point that was made earlier, as are pertinent inquiries from jurisdictions. So sorting out the level we want to be at, I think, is a good, and this is a great example of doing that. If folks, does that make sense to people? Because we will go back through the procedures and kind of make sure. But these came from the procedures. Okay. Any other issues in this section? We're good? Yes, Ms. O'Keefe.
Sorry, so that sentence that we were discussing would read, the CEO will provide a response as soon as possible, and then for complex responses, an interim response may be provided, which will include a timetable. Or did you still want the 10 days or 2 weeks, whatever, in there?
I think the as soon as possible was my sense, or timely.
Be sufficient.
Is sufficient. So the 2 weeks goes away in the bylaws, as does the whole sentence about four complex requests, and should the response require significant resources, all of that belongs in procedures and not
right. Thank you.
In the bylaws.
We could make one.
Yes, please sit down.
I think it would be useful to say an interim response should be provided, not may be provided.
In the procedures.
You'll hear something in
yes,
procedures.
In procedures.
In all cases, you'll hear something within a couple of weeks.
Okay. Ms. Porter.
I agree with what you just said, with one exception. I think that the sentence about should the response require significant resources, the CEO may forward the response to the next meeting of the board. That's actually a more important issue, because it says that individual members of the board can't tie up significant resources without the board as a whole or the committee as a whole okaying it. So I really think the sentence beginning should the response require significant resources, I think that should stay in the bylaws. I think it's a larger point.
I'm seeing some head nodding. Okay. So we're really just removing the sentence that says for complex requests and getting rid of the 2 weeks. And we'll deal with that, Mr. Yule, in the context of the procedures.
That's fair.
Okay? Everybody? Communication with the public. I think this is an area to flag, to come back and have a fulsome conversation on later. Everybody agree? Okay. Board CEO interrelationship. Again, there's not a lot here because we haven't had much conversation about it. And actually, Mr. Acosta asked for a chart that would kind of look at that issue to be done later. So I would say this is for a later date.
Yes, okay. And also the CEO was supposed to write up some proposal
right.
for his responsibilities. So.
Right.
Yes.
The next meeting.
Yeah, Madam Chairman, I think that the GM, we had started working on that document, and then he's out. So he was planning to send that to you before he, you know, this week, but you'll get it next week.
That's great. Thank you. Okay, meetings. I think this is a section that probably can be pared down in terms of what needs to be in the bylaws. We could do two things. We could talk about it right now, or we can take some, I can take a stab at sort of getting it to the high level and make a suggestion. What would be your pleasure?
Well,
or we can come back, we can say it's a later thing. Mr. Yule.
Unless I missed something in prior to arriving within the last half hour, this section we need to talk about, but then when it gets to like be a quorum, I think we need to, before we talk about meetings, we need to talk about the board makeup. Because,
okay.
I mean, the board makeup will then determine, you know, what the quorum is going to be. I mean, for instance, if we're going to make, I mean, if we're going to make, we're talking about, or it's on the table for discussion, alternates being converted to full-time voting members, that type of thing. So I think you need to flush that out first before you can decide your quorum.
Okay.
I mean, that's my take.
Mr. Downey?
Oh, I think we also have to deal in the reality of we need bylaws for how we now exist and a vision of how we might proceed in the future.
Right. Well, let's, Ms. Hudgens.
Yeah, because I think the point here, as it stands today, we are talking about the board meeting and the quorum, and in this part with looking at the quorum. And I don't think that changes anything, because other to do beyond that is change of contact. So I don't think we can, you know, go beyond that here. So I think we'll, it keeps us in, not even an interim, it just keeps us status quo until some major other action is done.
Because this section is actually about meetings of the board where action is taken, as opposed to committee meetings, which is covered in, I think, the committee section.
All right.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
No, Ms.
It's really just pulling compact provisions. But the one that you had discussed last meeting had to do with the chair's facilitating the resolution of potential jurisdictional vetoes. So that is new, so to speak. It's something that's not in the compact, but was something that the board discussed at your last meeting.
Right.
The rest is it's all from the compact. So they're
right. And so the question, Ms. Downey, go ahead.
No.
It's a separate subject.
Oh, okay. So the question really about the A through F is what should be in the bylaws, and then knowing that what's in the compact. And G, as Ms. O'Keefe says, is new, reflecting our conversation last time. So you might want to take a look at that and see if that does reflect. Mr. Benjamin.
Yes, sir.
Oops, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Mr.
On G, I don't know how you do a mediation in a public session.
So perhaps it's not well placed.
It's not clear to me how this would occur, and whether this is a meeting or a non-meeting or belongs here, or how you solve a problem of a potential jurisdictional veto in a public session. Then you're just having an open meeting. So something's got to give there.
I mean, one thing we did discuss at the last conversation was, and I don't see it here, an expectation that if a jurisdictional veto were to come, that it would be noticed in advance that that was an issue, rather than blowing up in a meeting.
I was going to say, my comments here was that this didn't really, I don't think this reflects all of what we talked about at the last meeting in terms of jurisdictional veto, and I just put a note off to the side that said it's lacking substance, and so we need to somehow
flush this out.
Yeah, flush this out again.
Well, and one of the questions to consider is whether the aspiration belongs in the bylaws, and the more fleshing out belongs in the procedure. So, you know, I think that's one way to sort of go at this. We may learn things as we work with this, that and procedures should be easier to change than bylaws. Mr. McKay, did you have a? Okay, all right. Mr. Downs.
I think it's important about, in the bylaws, having a statement about at least advance notice, this kind of in an executive session, well, if you don't agree, we're going to exercise a jurisdictional veto, is unfair to all of the participants. Processes about identifying an issue that is serious to a jurisdiction, fleshing those out as a visible process with the board, I think is an essential part of the openness and trust the board has with itself about its ability to communicate and solve problems. I think it belongs, that commitment about a set of principles or values about getting to a jurisdiction veto is something the board owes itself and probably the public for a better understanding about how we hold ourselves accountable here. It may not be this detail, maybe the language in G is in procedures, but I think the values and principles about how we address the potential of a jurisdiction veto is important to have in the bylaws.
Ms. Porter?
I would agree with that, and I would think that in the bylaws there should probably be two recognitions. One, that the jurisdictions have jurisdictional concerns and that there is in the compact a provision for a jurisdictional veto. That's on the one hand, and on the other hand saying that members of the board have a responsibility to the authority as a whole and should therefore attempt to resolve concerns prior to coming to a jurisdictional veto. So that both recognizes the existence of the jurisdictional veto, but also recognizes that board members have a joint responsibility to the authority and should therefore attempt to resolve disputes before resorting to a jurisdictional veto. And then I think in procedures, you flesh out how they go ahead and attempt to resolve these concerns before invoking the jurisdictional veto. That's how I would interpret it.
Anybody else?
Yeah, different subject than the veto. Under special meetings, in some respects, it also relates to agenda development.
What page are you on?
I'm on 6 in particular, special meetings.
Okay, gotcha.
But as I said, it also may relate to agenda development. It's a process that, I think correctly, strongly influenced and controlled by the chair for regular order. But we do have the provision here, the board may vote to hold or the board chair may call a special meeting. I think we should have some provision in there. What would cause the board to have to vote on that? In other words, can an individual member or some number of members call for a meeting? The board may decide not to do it, but I know in other circumstances I've seen bylaws that at least say, if you've got an issue, here's how you try to get it onto the agenda.
Okay. All right. Anything else in this meeting section?
There are issues with respect, I think, to quorum and alternate votes, but that, I think, has to do in some ways to structure.
Yeah, I think that will fall out as we work our way through it. So jurisdictional veto will definitely get some more writing and placement in both places as a result of our conversation. And I think probably meetings might be the last section we come back to have a fulsome discussion among ourselves. As other things are sorted through. Okay? Agenda minutes and parliamentary authority. I think a lot of this doesn't belong here, quite honestly. I think we need to say we keep minutes, you know, we follow Robert's rules, and we publish our agendas and provide meetings, agenda meeting materials. And the rest of this probably belongs in procedures. Mr. Downer?
Yeah, is this the point, or is there a point in bylaws where we should document the discussion at the last meeting about codification of resolutions? Does it belong here, or does it belong somewhere else? I think it is a bylaw issue that we say we should have such a document.
Ms. O'Keefe, do you have an opinion about that, where that might go, codification of resolutions and board actions?
Well, I hadn't actually thought of it as a bylaw issue at all. I thought we had been asked to come back with a proposal for doing it. If you're looking toward a board policy that all resolutions shall be codified, then that, I think, would be in your bylaws, not the procedures. Yeah. That's
a pretty simple statement.
Simple statement, yeah. Not how to do it or when to do it, but simple statement that that's understood to be the law of the land.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it depending on what the board views as codification, it could be.
And that's where procedures could definitely clarify.
Right. And your proposal probably would help us as well. Okay. Executive closed sessions of the board. This comes all from the procedures. I do think it's helpful to have the topics that are typical. Ms. Hudgens?
I think that this probably needs to look a little bit broader, that we're, and I come from the Virginia side now, in that it's very clear for a reader of the bylaws what the limitations of discussion will be, and that we should really note those limitations. And I think it's a very broad piece here, but can it be much more succinct in terms of legal matters? For example, safety and security matters, is that the strongest language to differentiate from what we just heard as a safety matter and what we heard last month of a different level of safety and security, that is something that's
I said that too. I was going to distinguish safety from security,
And the only part I was thinking is there a better way to qualify the level of safety and security such that it pertains to sensitive or something that brings the authority at risk or something like that, because I guess it just popped out as maybe.
You want to distinguish between things that require sensitive or confidential treatment versus the normal presentation in the safety committee, and we can certainly do that.
Tony, and then.
Yeah, I agree, Ms. Hudgens, about the aspect of threat analysis. You know, when we deal with threats, not only national threats, but local threats, that's the kind of stuff we want to do in closed session. And you know, that implies both security and safety, so it's not like it's mutually exclusive. Mm-hmm. So,
Jeff?
Well, I was just going to say, I'm okay with clarifying it, but there are really three tiers of information here. There's law enforcement-sensitive material that's circulated within law enforcement agencies. Then there's that material which law enforcement finds appropriate to share with the board but is not public information. And then there's public information. And I'm not sure, how much information you necessarily want to give, but you want to definitely get across the point that we're not going to have a discussion about security matters like we just had an open session in closed session. Mm-hmm. That if it's going to closed session, it's because it's law enforcement sensitive material that's not for public dissemination. And I don't know, exactly how to describe that, but I just wanted to remind us that there's really three different tiers here, and I think we need to respect those different tiers.
Okay. Mr. Down.
I think the underlying principle, I think, that ought to be here is that the executive session is not the rule but the exception. And that what needs to be written down is a clear statement as to why an exception can be made.
Okay. Can somebody explain to me audit matters that you would do in closed session? Just wondering.
Yeah, I would include something on there on that, because sometimes some of the audits could be criminal and related to that. Now, whether we want to say that or not, but also some can be very sensitive, and dealing with ongoing investigations or maybe even sting operations. So, you know, there's lots of things that could be incorporated under audits.
Is there a way, and I just ask this to have it be, because what I don't think we want to give the impression of is that we go into closed session if it's because we don't want to make the information public relative to audits.
And
right?
I think, you know, the description that was just offered up, if it's an audit matter that that's got some fraud or something reference to it, that's a personnel matter.
Right.
And I think it would be covered under personnel.
In some cases, it also is ongoing. You know, it could be something that's ongoing and you don't want to necessarily release that.
I guess what I'm saying is we should get some more clarity around that term.
There is, just as a to draw the board's attention, all of these bases for closed session are preceded by the general statement at the beginning of that section, which characterizes those topics as critical, sensitive matters or confidential, proprietary matters, the untimely disclosure of which may be detrimental to the authority. So that is an attempt to distinguish it. I understand that the board wants more in each of the individual sections, but the overall principle is that it has to have some unusual sensitivity or confidential nature. But we're happy to flesh out each of the sections as well, so it's clear.
What
is just a question? What does critical mean in this context? Because anything can be considered critical in terms of meeting a deadline. So I understand sensitive and the other phrases, but critical seems to be pretty broad. If that was kind of the principle that we're using to define what goes into an executive session.
I don't have an answer to that.
Well, we're trying to limit the parameters of what we put into executive session. I would try to be very clear about, you know, if it's sensitive, criminal, personnel-related, whatever. I think those are clear, but using words like that, like critical is...
Critical should not be read as critical of the authority. We don't want to
talk about that. Yeah, I was reading critical as the opposite of trivial.
Yeah, right.
Mr. Downey.
Yeah, as we work out this language, I would suggest, too, that we talk with the Inspector General to be sure that the things she thinks should be brought in executive session are covered.
Okay. Anybody else on that section? We can make these adjustments as we go, but I'm whatever people want to say. Ms. Porter?
The safety and security matters, following up on Mr. McKay's point, maybe we should say something like sensitive safety and security matters where public safety would be compromised by public release of the information. Is that sort of what you were thinking of? I mean, presumably, the first category that you mentioned wouldn't be brought to us at all, and so we're basically talking about the second category.
I would think there could be some instances where the first category would, but I'm okay. I'm comfortable with that language as it was just given.
Oh, try it again, Kathy. I'm
sorry.
Jesse, you're hard to hear.
I'm sorry. I said I can think of instances where the first category would be brought to our attention, but I'm also comfortable with the language that was just offered.
Okay. Did you get that, Carol? One of you guys got that?
I think so. Okay. It'd be nice if you could repeat it.
I can repeat it.
Okay. Thank you.
Just a thought on that particular sentence. We may want to get some element of investigations or something like that, so it's not just public safety being compromised, but you could compromise some ongoing other, you know, something we get from TSA or investigation or something.
Sure.
So we can add that to
this. Sure. Mr. Downey?
Yeah. Following the list of justifications comes a procedural paragraph that reflects current procedure. I think it is appropriate to encompass this in bylaws, but I wanted to be sure we are comfortable with locking in place that the executive session precedes the board meeting and that committees do not meet in executive session. I think those are both things that have worked, at least in my limited experience. I want to be sure that we're not backing into it without some thought.
Anybody? My initial reaction is that the scheduling of things rarely belongs in bylaws, because people's lives change, and it may make more sense later to do it on the off day because there's work that has to happen to get it to the board meeting. I do think the sentence that says committee shall not meet in executive session is important, so that it's only the board that has that power. So I think that, and I think the next little part that says the board doesn't take formal action in executive session, the actions happen in a full meeting, are also important to maintain. But I would argue the scheduling and some of the other of that belongs in procedures.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Mr. McKay.
I think actually you can just simplify this whole thing by eliminating the first sentence, because actually what follows behind that I think is all important. Instead of other executive sessions down in the next sentence, you would just start it with executive sessions may be authorized, and that way you're not taking away from the items below it, which I think are important. So if you had just eliminated the first sentence and started the third sentence by striking other and just with executive, it would be grammatically correct, but I think you want to leave that other stuff in there.
So that you're saying leave the second sentence as well? The agenda for each session shall be made available to the public prior to the meeting,
yes,
et cetera?
Yeah, yes, I don't know why you wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I think that might trap us unduly if the way you're suggesting that this be drafted. The executive session may be authorized by a public action of the board. I mean, we'd have to have a board meeting to authorize going into executive session. Then we'd have to have the executive session. Then we'd have to have the board meeting to act on the executive session. I think there's some value to this first sentence that says automatically there may be an executive session as part of the process without having to vote first to put it in place. And it's just a bench
history is
initiative.
That, yeah,
so
what you described is what we used to do.
Yeah.
We used to meet,
right,
say we're going into executive session, go into executive session, come back out of executive session and say,
and
we were just in an executive session,
right,
which seemed like a waste. So there ought to be some mechanism other than a vote of the board to get you into executive session. But I do think it's important to say that no actions will be taken in executive session.
Right, but
unless what we want to have is emergency actions in executive session, which then have to be ratified by a board meeting, that's another option. But you could always have an open board meeting immediately after an executive session to take whatever action you need to take.
The way this is written, though, if you read it, is other executive sessions may be authorized by public action of the board.
But then there has to be some other way of doing it.
Yeah. Well, the first sentence, as currently written, is
right,
we're automatically
authorized. Right, but if we're going to eliminate the schedule piece entirely, which I think I agree with the chair, is it's unusual for that to be in the bylaws saying this is when we're going to have executive sessions. Then, you know, I think we need, if we're going to eliminate that scheduling component entirely, then I would assume that the only way that you could have it is by some public announcement of closed session. I mean, how else would you go into closed session? And maybe that's just a circulation of the agenda ahead of time, not necessarily an act by a public body. But I certainly would hate to arrive here and find out we're going into executive session without advance notice of that.
Right. Mr. Van?
Well, it seems to me that if there were a provision that said they may either be regularly scheduled or may be.
I think that's part of the solution, Ms. Hutchins.
Well, I think there, and I'm putting on a different hat, but I think there is a point about the public acknowledgement that there is an executive session and that we will comply to what these bylaws say require that executive session. So I think there should be some format that either in our procedures that say that it will occur in this matter, that is, it will be regularly scheduled or whatever, or we find ourselves, I think, chasing an opportunity to have an executive session. But I think we ought to make the connection that we are affirming to the public that this is a necessity that we believe, and therefore they have some notice, and so we're going to try and keep to a timetable that reflects that. Otherwise, I think you'll have it all over the place, and I think the first sentence kind of helps us, but it goes into probably
more detail than I think is necessary. So yeah. I think I've heard several suggestions saying, you know, executive sessions will be regularly scheduled or may be called upon whatever set of actions we decide, whether it's that the chair may call them or some subset of the board may, you know. That was some of the special meeting conversation that we had earlier. Yes, Mr. Campbell.
There is the proviso in here also that there be an agenda and that agenda
yes.
be circulated in advance
yes.
with some limited information. So,
yeah.
Ms. Carroll?
Yes.
Let me ask you, Carroll, is there, we can schedule an executive session, but we can also cancel an executive session.
This
so I think.
Schedule is subject to cancellation.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking we would rather do. That because I think by putting it in a calendar, it does two things. It gives a public notice, but it also makes sure that we always have an opportunity to address an issue that may come up
mm-hmm.
while we're here at a board meeting that needs to be addressed before we leave.
Yeah.
And then, if not, then the executive session is canceled and we move forward.
Oh, you just said something. Which is contradictory. Which may be contradictory to what we're trying to get at, or at least what the draft language calls for. I thought we were saying that executive sessions of the board shall be scheduled to be held prior to each full board meeting, subject to cancellation by the chair. But then I thought I just heard you say, Madam Chairman, that it's nice to have that so that if we're here for a board meeting and something comes up and we want to go in exec session, then we can do it. But that you can't do that because it says that the executive session will occur prior to a board meeting. So this, I think that covers it. That's why that other language is in there that says other executive sessions may be authorized by public action of the board in which the purposes of the session are reasonably identified. Because there may be something that will come up during a meeting that we then decide, hey, you know what, we've got to go in executive session to talk about this. I mean, I just want to make sure that I heard what's being discussed. Yeah.
Mr. Downey.
And even if there is, if we make use of that scheduled slot, it still requires that an agenda be provided and the public know what, in general terms, what the topic is. But at least we're all on notice that we should be prepared to have such a session. And I agree, if something comes up, we can then vote.
To go
in executive session, we would still have to say why we're doing it.
Well, the simple fix is to change the word from shall to may to accomplish what you all are describing. If you said an executive session of the board may be scheduled, then it actually provides the flexibility you're talking about if you're looking for that amount of flexibility. But shall is a defined legal term. So if you put may, I think you can accomplish both what Ms. Hudgens and Mr. Downey were just talking about.
So I would eliminate the before the board meeting. Change it to on a regular basis, on a periodic basis, something.
I think that is actually the fix, to say they're regularly scheduled.
Yeah.
Unless the chair cancels them, and that there's another way that the board can go into executive session should it need to. Okay, so I think that's where we're kind of headed. Those are the big ideas, and we don't want to lose the idea that there's to the extent possible, there's an agenda circulated in advance so board members know what the topics are that will be discussed. Okay? Everybody good with that? Yes.
I would say an agenda and materials, supporting materials.
Okay.
So that we don't just get a thing that says, here's the title, but you don't know what it's about.
Okay.
Well, the public gets the title, but you're saying
right.
board members.
Board members get the supporting materials. Yeah.
Okay. Got it. If there are any. Yeah. Okay. I think looking at the time, looking at my promise, let's finish going through this. We're doing some great work. We'll come back and look at the board responsibilities and chair responsibilities when we come back to this in 2 weeks. That'll give people a little longer to look at that section as well. Okay, emergency sessions of the board, which allows us to use media to join together. Anybody particularly concerned about what's there? Mr. Downey.
Yeah. I find it a little ambiguous that a quorum is not necessary. But maybe that's cured by the fact that even if an action is taken, which I would read as an action taken by less than a quorum, it still would be ratified at the next meeting.
Some of the folks who've used this, Mr. Benjamin.
Since I was involved in writing this one just a couple of years ago, yeah, there's an error in it that got adjusted at one point, and that is the intent originally, and it's not expressed well here, was that in order to hold an emergency meeting, you did not have to have a quorum, because there may be an emergency where you just can't get a quorum, but that if you wanted to take an action, there had to be a quorum.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that distinction needs to be made, and that's not clear in the way it's written.
So the action is taken by a quorum in an emergency session.
Right.
Effect.
So if you can't get a quorum together, you can't take an action, but you can meet and talk.
Yeah. Sure.
Okay.
We're good.
We need to clarify that then, I think, that point. Anybody else have something on this section? No? Okay, committee structure, and this is where our language is about the participation of, I believe, is this where the alternate language is? It says all board members may attend and participate, chair may establish special or ad hoc. Any committee chair can establish a special ad hoc or subcommittee consistent. Any question of committee jurisdiction over an issue is resolved by the chair. Yes.
The reference to five members constituting a quorum for a committee implies that there's a uniform size of committees, which I think is a point we haven't addressed yet. I'll just flag that for future.
Okay. All right. Yes, Mr. McKay?
I thought we actually do have uniform. I thought we went back to committees of the whole. I think that would what Mr. Downey's talking about might apply to subcommittees. But
it might,
aren't all of
I understood committees of the whole at the moment to be an interim issue with respect to interim procedures, still to be discussed in terms of bylaws.
Okay, so
not that I've made up my mind on it, just
right. So that may be another area that we would have to wait on then, because we had problems when we weren't committees of the whole with coming up with quorums and trying to figure out who was there and who wasn't. So I think this section dramatically changes based on the decision of whether or not all of our committees are committees of the whole. But it does raise an issue with regard to the subcommittees. And we only have the two, Mr. Giancola's and the one that I chair. And, those are, we need to better establish and define those as to how they fit into our structure, because right now it's kind of, it's not well defined. And, those committees, of course, are open to the entire board to attend, but they do have, specifically with regard to the audits committee, does discuss items that, are not available to the public.
Mm-hmm.
And I know we've had conversations with the general counsel about that they're allowed to be closed sessions, but they should be following then, I would suppose, the closed session requirements of the whole board. And that should be specified somewhere that they may be open, they may be closed sessions, but we need to announce ahead of time which of the two it is. And it ought to be following the same procedures as all the other committees and full board meetings, go through for consistency and for transparency for the public.
Ms. Hutchins?
I had a general question in that, are we going to come back and discuss committees in a larger sense as to are we comfortable with this structure?
I do think this probably is a more structured conversation about this, but I'm grateful to have some of these issues flagged because I think it will help us organize. This point that Mr. McKay just made actually goes back to page 9 where in the executive session section, in that paragraph, that last sentence says committee shall not meet in executive session. That we got to sort that out.
And
being so new, it wasn't, I don't think either of your subcommittees have met since I have been here. So So I think we're going to have to work our way through that, but I think the suggestion...
I do think we have to, because I know in both, I mean, in the case of the TRC, we're just stuck, we have been discussing contractual matters.
Uh-huh.
And I know in audits, they have their own issues regarding, you know, what's available to the public and what's not. However, both of those committees do discuss other things that certainly are and should be available to the public. And so we need to, if nothing else, we need to clarify that they're following the same procedures as other committees. And if we think committees could meet in executive session, if committees are committees of the whole, that makes that a lot easier. If they're not, that poses a problem.
Right.
And so we really, to even fix that part, we need to know the answer to the first question, which is, are all of our committees going to be committees of the whole or not?
Okay. That's a... Reflect that.
Madam Chairman, just,
yes.
Just at the bottom of page 10 is the sentence that starts and continues on to 11. Any committee chair may establish a special ad hoc or subcommittee consistent with the committee's responsibilities, and I think that's the only place it covers right now, the fact that there is a TRC.
Right.
And to address what you were just discussing, maybe that's where a couple of sentences need to be added, that ad hoc committees will follow, you know, similar procedures, whether it's public or exec. We need to put some sentence to address, so we can put something at that right after that sentence. Those committees are open to all board members, so.
Yeah, and they are, and they always have been. I'm fine with that part. I do think that, you know, what Mr. Pont just suggested makes sense as an interim, even until we get to the final answer about committees of the whole or not, because I think this is an area that actually does need clarity now.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we could send a message by adding the sentences he's talking about and then revisit the issue once we make a decision formally about the makeup of the committees.
Okay.
And in that discussion, I think we should focus on, even if the committees are committees of the whole, do we want to allow them to have executive sessions?
Mm-hmm.
Or do we want to elevate that to only those things that the board is acting on?
Right.
Okay. All right. So we'll come back to this section probably fairly soon because – oh, Mr. Benjamin.
If I may just comment, because I may not get the chance to comment in the future, about committees of the whole versus committees with smaller membership. Historically, in fact, Metro did have – committees with very limited membership and operated that way until about 8 years ago, and then went to committees of the whole and then tried again with smaller committees. One of the issues that you will run into and that you have to start thinking about as you move forward with this is, as you have any substantial number of committees and as you also establish performance requirements for board members, such as attendance at meetings, you may want to constrain how many people are expected to show up at board meetings, leave them open to everybody coming, but constrain the attendance so that everybody doesn't feel like they have to be there all the time for every committee. The whole purpose of committees is to do a lot of work without everybody there. And those two now have to interact as you move forward.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good observation. I also think with so many new folks for a while, we're going to have, you know, whether people are required to come or not, they're going to come because it's the only way to learn.
If they don't come, they shouldn't get it tomorrow.
Right.
Right. But we've always said that. Everybody can come.
Yeah.
And everybody can participate.
Okay. Yes, Ms. Hutchins.
I'd just like to leave in the harbor a broader thought for whether or not it works or not, and that is, rather than the structure of multiple committees, whether there's the opportunity for work session type things that boards have, rather than to proliferate the committees that you need. Most of this is information that needs to be at some point brought to the board and the entire board participate. Maybe that's another way to think about this. It may also reduce time, but it also may reduce the sharing of information in an informative way.
Mr. Downey?
Yeah, I think that's something we really should look at. It would be helpful to me to get some information about how work sessions work in other contexts. What are the rules? How do they work? And are they? Is that something that we could adopt?
Okay. So this section will indeed come back for more fulsome conversation. Almost to the end. Public hearings. This has some very specific things that public hearings are required for, that, and that's, those are in our procedures now. Those of you who've been around longer, I think, we would appreciate your reflection on whether this is, I guess this does come from the compact, Ms. O'Keefe. Okay. So the first two sentences come out of the compact and
or not.
I mean, okay. Okay. Any other comments on that section? Mr. McKay.
Just a comment, and I don't want to complicate this because I can make a case either way, but for example, our last budget presentation that we had technically may not have required a public hearing, but we all acknowledge we're going to have a public hearing on the budget. So there's no language in here that really expressly gives the board the authority to have public hearings on other such matters as it deems appropriate. And I think we should put something like that in there because there are things we handle where we're going to have a public hearing that may not neatly fit into the description in this article. And so I do think we need some type of sentence that the board may call public hearings as it feels appropriate on other such matters. However, you know, you want to come up with the language on that, but that's the point.
But on the other side of that, I don't think we want to create language that puts an expectation that we always will have hearings.
No, I don't.
I don't want someone coming in and saying, you could have a hearing on this, why aren't you doing it?
But right, no, I don't think, and I don't know how, you know, I don't think you can really qualify it in here, but the way I read this right now, technically, we may not have to have a public hearing on the budget, but I can't imagine this board's not going to. And so, you know, I do think you need some level of flexibility and some level of constraint. And the devil's in the actual language, but I think you can accomplish what Mort just said and what I said by carefully wording a sentence.
Mr. Benjamin?
Yeah, I would make that sufficiently broad so it covers things like grant public hearings, which you're required to have. They aren't included in here, but, you know, it doesn't fit into any of the convening categories. It also is one of the major reasons that that last part is there. For grant public hearings and things like that, very often you don't really need a board member there because nobody really shows up to testify.
Mm-hmm. Can I just ask, these are public hearings separate from the public comment. I mean, we have a public hearing on every item that we have to act on our agenda, and that happens at the board meeting in advance of the board's vote. This is a separate standalone. That's what this section is about, right? Yes? Okay. All right. So we'll do some fixing there. Board established advisory committees and council. This is a this captures all three groups that we have created as part of our advisory groups, I guess. I would note that the only people who aren't talking directly to us as a group are the JCC. And again, I don't have enough experience to know whether the system works for folks or not, but I would note the difference.
Yeah. When I read this, I asked a second paragraph about the JCC that were provided copies of the agenda and the minutes and the results. I don't recall seeing any of those, so.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Ms. Hutchins?
I wonder if that works.
Yeah, we do see them sparingly. But the question is I had not put the JCC in the category with the other two. And the other two are, I think, public bodies versus the JCC. I almost think of them as what product-type work that's done for the jurisdictions. And are they considered public?
Well, I don't consider it public. I've always considered those meetings extended staff meetings, but, you know, our staff meeting with the broader jurisdictional staff. but it's not something that they have specifically addressed in rules, because they don't have comparable rules to procedure as have been adopted for the two formal advisory bodies. So it's, I guess it's a placement issue. It's true that the JCC has longstanding presence and has always been in the rules of procedure. It doesn't have quite the same formality and legal establishment as do the two other advisory groups. And it is different in the sense that I don't believe it's required to have public meetings that really can determine what it wants to do. So first question is, does it belong in the bylaws or in the procedures where it has been traditionally? Because it doesn't quite have the same formality, but I believe at some point in my past I've tracked back to the original board resolutions that established the JCC. So it has that as part of the creation. It simply doesn't have bylaws and so forth as the others have adopted.
Well, I think we would like to come back maybe and look at this one to see those concerns regarding and I think I probably would like to see the resolution. And see how it was characterized so that we determine what their role truly was intended to be and how it was a larger role of staff support versus public.
Madam Chairman,
yes,
just there was a comment made about the JCC agenda in the minutes, and those are, I believe, I see them in the mail out, in the Friday mail out, they do go out, and I think JCC meet once a month, so you only will see it once a month in the Friday mail out.
I believe I've seen those. It was the second sentence, results of JCC consideration of items referred by the board or transmitted to the committee. I've never seen anything like that.
Sometimes on the budget, they'll report from the JCC.
That's the only time that has happened, when some budget has been referred, and at that time you have had a report back from the JCC.
Well, and one of my questions, I guess, is, and this is definitely way in the weeds, but how does, when the JCC meets and the information that's available to them line up with our board meetings, so that there's a possibility that folks have had a fulsome staff conversation, so those of us who are being briefed get the advantage of that conversation. I don't know the answer to the question, but I would raise that as a question, because if the value is that they've talked through at a much more technical level than we can a particular issue, then us knowing that, being able to bring that with us into the meeting is actually a really good thing. And you all probably need somebody.
I know nobody. but
anyway.
The black box.
Which is why maybe the minutes being available, or, you know, them having the opportunity to comment on particular items at the board meeting might be useful to all of us. I don't know. Again, I haven't been here long enough to know, and I'm with more to I missed the printout, so.
You've raised a concern that we are not, as board members in the meeting, trying to make a decision about something, and they have not had the opportunity to explore. So I think, I don't know if there's a way of timing or something specific about that.
So that may be an issue worth working through. Mr. Yule.
Yes, Madam Chair. Going back to public hearings.
Yes, sir.
First sentence is, the board authorizes the conduct of public hearings for construction projects. Is that too broad? Because I would imagine that you, for every single construction project, we have to have a public hearing. I think what we're trying to say is that for major development and land use projects, unless there's a, it's required that every single construction project is subject to a public hearing.
I think you're right. That's not a very good term. So right now, the board does have the hearings on your CIP, at least that's required federally. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something that it's required to do and does. Construction projects, that was intended to address, I think, the adopted regional system concept. So let me come back with better language for that. I mean, that's very precise.
I don't believe there's a public, you go out and have a public hearing to say that you're going to do maintenance work at Shady Grove Metro.
Right.
That's a for instance.
Okay. Good catch. Okay, the last section just is a majority vote of the board can amend these procedures, except they're not procedures. Mr. Towney.
Right. Yeah, it is bylaws, and I think this should have a little more standing than just a majority vote. I think it should be at a regular board meeting as an item that's on an agenda. That's not a surprise. We're going to change the rules today, but so-and-so isn't here to argue against it.
And Ms. O'Keefe, you and I had a conversation about the fact that that voting at the board table does require, you know, there are certain requirements about jurisdictional participation and all that. And so that a vote at a regular board meeting by the full board implies all of those things that are written in already to the compact, right?
Correct.
It's a majority,
It's a majority, but consistent with compact requirements. So. Right. Change it to bylaws and then make it clear that we're talking about the compact voting structure.
Right. Right. I think that would be useful. Okay. We got through that. Not quite an hour. Good work, everybody. So we'll put the on our next agenda. Oh, I'm sorry, Ms. Jones. Yes. Absolutely.
I noticed on the agenda that there is an item on the approval of international travel for two of the employees of the authority. As I understand it, I think, the board put that in place as an authority for the board to approve any international travel after a newspaper story. Bad stories make bad policies. In looking at this, two things. One, I think it is more important for the board to set a performance criteria for the general manager, CEO, to approve items like that instead of having it come as a formal board meeting agenda item. The second is that as part of governance, we should ask the staff and the general counsel to look at any other anomalies that the board has created by resolution about specific approval authority of items and have the board, as part of this process, look at whether or not those should be framed in a value or performance standard that, other than having the board have to take a specific action at a board meeting to approve an item. I sense that there are probably a number of other areas where the board has abrogated to itself specific approval authority rather than a delegation within a guidance framework for the general manager.
One of which is actually coming before us today,
where the staff has suggested that personnel procedures don't need to be approved by the board.
So it, right, right. So, Ms. O'Keefe, you must have a short list of those because you know what you have to bring us, right?
Actually, the only other one that immediately leaps to mind, we used to bring APTA attendance to the board, and when I was going through resolutions at the board's request, I ran across several involving APTA. Now, I didn't actually read them because I'm going through the, you know, indices looking for specific things that might relate to governance. Now, apart from that and the international travel, and that's, I think, falls within the anomaly category that was raised, the larger task of going through all the board resolutions would take quite a while to find out what might be more profitably delegated to the general manager.
Okay.
Or what?
Hey, Mr. Johnny.
By practice has been delegated that relates to a resolution from years ago that people aren't paying attention to.
Well, yeah, there are a lot of things that fall into that category.
Yeah, we really are. A really big resolution that retires a whole bunch of resolutions.
Well, there are a lot of resolutions, and some of them have become fallen into disuse just because they're no longer relevant. But we don't necessarily go back and repeal those resolutions. So that's part of the codification process.
Okay. So our agenda for next time will be review of the board chairman and the board board member responsibilities, as well as the paragraph that describes the governance, the role of the governance committee, and then I'll work with staff, and we'll create an order to take on the chunks that we just said we got to spend more time talking. So we'll come back to those. And we had flagged communication as a significant area. I don't know whether we'll get to it next time or not, but that may be a place that is easy for us to start in our work. Okay? Yes, Mr. Yule.
Since this is a work in progress.
Yes.
And we're, you know, every time we meet, it's going to be these changes and updates going to be incorporated. Can we get them dated?
I think that's a great idea, and actually, I think we need to do track changes as well. So, yep, that's a great. Yeah, that's a very good.
And still subject to what we said earlier, nothing's approved.
Okay, that's everybody's good? All right, we're adjourned.